Blog Talk Radio.
Constitution Hour. I am your host, Ron Golden, and of course, the Constitution Hour is brought to you by Patriot Families. You know, I had to play that song. It is more appropriate right now, at this time, than perhaps any other time in our history. Of course, it was very appropriate when it was written, in reference to the Vietnam War. But the Vietnam War wasn't really a holy war, was it? Or at least it certainly wasn't projected as one. But what we're seeing today certainly, I think, qualifies. I think Saddam Hussein had it right. We are in a holy war. You know, it's interesting. Miss Linda sent me an email last week regarding Glenn Beck, one of his shows, in which he talked about the Sykes-Picot Agreement, which, as many of you should know by now if you listen to my radio program, was also called the Red Line Agreement. And I just think it's interesting. Maybe Glenn's listening into the show. from time to time, but I doubt it. If you understand the history of mankind, you understand that this latest struggle, uprising, brouhaha, whatever label you want to put on it, this latest campaign by Muslim extremists or Muslims, it's nothing new. There is nothing new. Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun, and he was right. You know, mankind has been struggling for dominance over humanity since the garden. That hasn't changed. What the British Empire and later the United States, with the assistance of the British Empire and the French, did in the Middle East, we can point to that today and say that's the proximate cause of all of the strife and unrest over there, but that's not really fair either. I mean, it is. The current dissatisfaction. But prior to that, let's not fool ourselves into believing that the Muslim world was settled and perfectly accepting of the Ottoman Empire. There are two sides to that story. As I've pointed out before, you have the Sunnis and you have the Shias. And they don't much like each other. And I don't see them coming to any kind of an agreement anytime soon on who should be the head of the caliphate. And the United States, as we know, has sided from the very outset with Saudi Arabia. And interestingly enough, it is King Faisal's descendants in the House of Saud, the royal family, who claims direct descendancy from the guy they call the Prophet, Muhammad. So that really sets the stage for an angry, detracted struggle or battle between the two sides. So, you know, remove the great Satan, remove the little Satan, and they're still going to fight each other over who gets to be top dog. Meanwhile, the United States has been top dog for a very long time, globally, as we know. And the mechanism used for that is money. And through the pegging of our currency to oil, we have had pretty much complete control. There's been some interesting things that have transpired in the last few years with regard to the Federal Reserve Bank, central banks around the world, and another bank that we don't really think of as a bank because it's not called a bank, and that is the IMF. But I think a little bit of cursory study about the IMF and its role in global finance, and looking at, golly, feel like I've swallowed a hairbrush here. Sorry about that. Looking at the current composition of the IMF should give us some clues as to perhaps where this whole thing might be headed, what direction it's headed in. Yeah, that's probably true enough, Mikey. And, you know, I promised that I would perhaps explore this evening some different possibilities or explanations for some of the things that go on in the world. So don't shoot the messenger. I will open up with an interesting note that it appears the Georgia Guidestones have been augmented or updated, I should say. If you go online and look up the Guidestones, you'll know that I've talked about the Guidestones previously, but you won't find that by looking online. But if you look up the Guidestones, there is a lot of chatter and stuff going on right now. And on the panel of the Guidestones that is chiseled in English and on the other side Spanish, there has been inserted on the top right-hand corner of the English side of the panel a square cube, or a cube, I guess it's not square, it's a cube, that appears to bear the date 2014. Now, there's been a lot of suggestion that perhaps this is a prank or not legitimate. If you go back and look at very early images from 1980, 81 of the Guidestones, you'll clearly see that that top right-hand corner of the English panel has a cutout, a line, if you will, two lines that we can visibly see from the face of the panel that approximates the size of the cube that has now been inserted. And many of the photographs that you can find online show that line cut out, but there's still a chunk of granite in there, so it's not missing. It's still there. Now, if you look in 2009, there was some vandalism to the Guidestones. And in the pictures from 2009, you'll notice that that section of granite is missing. And only yesterday was it reported that this cube has shown up. Since 2009, the county sheriff's office has installed security cameras. So they should at least have video of someone installing this cube with 2014 on it. And there's a lot of speculation. I'm going to speculate that because it is on the English panel, that would indicate America, and perhaps 2014 is the date, the last year that we are on the top of the heap. Perhaps 2014 is the year that precipitates the collapse of confidence in the United States and ends our dollar hegemony. Just throwing that out there as a possibility. Could be that it doesn't mean anything at all. Could be that the Georgia Guidestones was just a publicity stunt to draw attention to the town of Elberton, Georgia. Who knows? I don't believe that that's the truth. But, well, Mike, it's interesting. You say all this in 2 months, but you know that reminds me of customers who come into my shop and say, you know, my water pump just went out. I don't understand. You know, you guys changed my oil yesterday, and now today my water pump is broken. I just find that strange. You know, it just all of a sudden it just broke. But that doesn't bear in mind that the car has 198,000 miles on the original water pump. My point is that there's been a lot of water under the bridge leading up to the collapse of the monetary system. So it's not like it's just all going to occur in 2 months. And in fact, as we know, the Chinese have been working since at least 1997 to push the dollar out of its position as a reserve currency. We also know that we just had a huge stress test, if you will, of what is probably going to be the world currency, if my guesses are correct, the euro. The euro was fully instituted. We had all the strife and unrest and, near collapse in 2008, 9, 10, 11. But now we're told things are so much better. And if we look at the head of the IMF today, it's a French woman named Christine Lagarde. There are a couple of other folks in positions of power at the IMF. Lagarde is from Europe. We've got Lipton from the United States, from Japan, Shinohara, Egypt, Shafiq, and from China, Min Zhu. Those are the top folks at the World Bank and the IMF. The IMF is for all intents and purposes the central bank of the world. Now, it wasn't always that way. What I mean is the IMF did not operate as the central bank of the world. What would happen is that in the past there was a pool of deposits from the various countries. The United States, England, China, Japan, Egypt, and other countries. And that pool of currencies, deposits, if you will, acted as an investment in third world countries. The IMF would loan money for specific building projects in third world countries and emerging economies, as they say. But that changed. And it changed dramatically in 2008 and moving forward. What happened during the time frame of our housing bubble is the IMF began issuing its own currency. And that is a little bit different. And in fact, the IMF began to leverage credit. Now, according to what I can find, they're currently leveraged at a ratio of 3-1. The United States is leveraged at a ratio of well over 100-1. Japan at over 250-1, and so on. So we can kind of see where this might be headed, that the IMF is the only one left standing globally that can provide the liquidity necessary to bail out the markets and the governments and the banks. And I want to read this to you because this is very short. This is from Min Zhu, the gentleman that works at the IMF. He is the head of banking policy from China. And he says, when the next crisis hits, and I quote, the logic leads quickly from one world to one bank, to one currency for the planet. So when we incur the next economic crisis, which I think we can all agree is only a matter of when, not if, he says that the logic, based on the system as it is, leads quickly from one world to one bank to one currency for the whole planet. When we take that into account with some of the other things that are going on, like Agenda 21, like the climate change nonsense in New York City, when we add those things all together and then we come to this seemingly innocuous 2014 inserted on the Georgia Guidestones and the message that they convey. Well, one cannot help but at least ponder the possibility that this is all part of a grand scheme, if you will, a plan. Hasn't everyone been talking about a new world order for God knows how long? You know, there's other possibilities. It's possible that all of this is just circumstantial idiosyncrasies of human nature. You know, it just happens that the European Union builds their parliament building to emulate the Tower of Babel. If you know the history of Babylon, you know that Babylon, for a long time, was considered the center of the world, the cultural and commercial center of the world. Now, of course, it wasn't, but that was the known world to the people who were writing at the time, the Sumerians, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Zoroastrians, the Persians, later the Ottoman Empire. Ottoman Empire. There's that caliphate that everyone's clamoring about today. And haven't we been talking about, right here, the infomercial that you're being sold? And does this little seemingly small insignificant cube with what could be construed as the date 20 and on the other side 14, is that not just feeding fuel into the fear and the thinking of the day? So perhaps it's intentional manipulation, perhaps it's just all circumstance. I think it's a lot of circumstantial evidence that adds up to more coincidence than I can bear, knowing the history behind it. And knowing that the bankers don't give a damn, quite honestly, if it's the United States of America or China or Portugal or Spain or Greece or Germany or Israel, for that matter, that comes out as the head of the snake at the end of the day, what they concern themselves with, from what I can see, is total control. And that control is best brought about by free will. Remember, I've talked about this many, many times. All you have to do is refuse to consent. Stop consenting. But this is, ladies and gentlemen, the most difficult decision that any modern human could possibly make. I mean, let's face it, this is the this is the mirror image of the young man that comes to Jesus and says, I've kept all the commandments. I've never broken the law. Is there anything else I need to do? And he says, yeah. He says, sell everything you own. Give it to the poor. And pick up your burden, your cross. Follow me. Well, folks, here we are. You know, this was a conversation that was had in our Patriot Family's chat room many years ago, several years ago, when I pointed out this very scenario. If you don't want to be part of the world, if you don't want to be of the world, it's quite simple. Don't be. Leave it behind. Walk away. Ah, but that's difficult. Oh, it is. Which is why Christ told that young man that very thing. Because he knew that it was the pride of the flesh, the lust of the flesh, for all things culture, the trappings of a comfortable life. Those were the things that he was truly not able to do without. He couldn't walk away from them. He could not simply trust in God and walk away all the comfort of life. Just like in the boat during the storm, when they got all excited and were worried they were going to die, even though they're in the boat with Jesus Christ himself, Christ stands up, calms the storm. He looks at him and says, oh, ye have little faith. If you had only the faith of a grain of mustard seed. See, we like to complain about these things, but we like these things. We like to complain about the cost of these things, the freedoms that are being stolen from us, and the reality is nobody's taking your freedom. You're willingly giving it away. In fact, a good number of us get up and work 10, 12, 15 hours a day to give away those freedoms for the privilege of purchasing trinkets. I know not everybody's going to agree with that, and that's okay. I don't care. You don't have to agree with it. It's the reality. It truly is. If we're just damned brutally honest with ourselves, that really is the reality. Now, I know, you know, folks are going to say, well, there's a balancing act. You know, you've got to balance this and that. No, we have allowed ourselves to be lured into where we are today. I know that there are people that absolutely believe, without a shadow of a doubt, that the modern nation state of Israel was a sign from God. I disagree. We can disagree. That's okay. We don't have to agree on everything. But I'll tell you why. Because from the very moment that the World Zionist Organization began trying to repopulate the Levant, there has been continual war and bloodshed, unceasing to this very day. Now, for some of you that don't know, that date was in the late 1800s. 1873, I believe it was, is when that was first being attempted. I don't want to take sides in their fight. And I won't. Both sides are wrong. And I believe we have Miss Linda Sills on the line with us from California. How are you, Miss Linda?
Fine, Ron. How's it going? I love the subjects because you're touching on so many things, but I did see that one. There was one documentary on Israel, and of course, the one that Glenn was doing. And there were several that I got to see. I think the one you sent me was pretty right on. And like you said, not taking sides because it's a mess. I mean,
well, you know, here's the thing for me, and I am sure this will piss some people off, but here's the thing: Israel is the name that God gave to His chosen, those who followed Him and are called by His name. Israel is not a landmass, never was. It is a people. The promised land was a covenant. It was a contract. You go back and you read your Bible, and you tell me that from the moment of the covenant forward, the entire book deals with one thing. You got to keep up your end of the bargain, or I'm taking it away.
Exactly.
It's a performance contract. They were twice exiled from the promised land, not because God broke His promise. God doesn't break His promise. Because they didn't perform to the terms of the contract. The first time was a little bit shorter duration. The second time was 70 years. And isn't it interesting, who were they in captivity to? The king of Babylon.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Think about that. This is the Babylonian captivity. That was the second captivity. The first one was to the Assyrians. So the third time, they rejected Him outright in Christ.
Yes.
And within that generation, all of their temples, all of their cities, and the majority of their people were destroyed. That's a historical fact. Of 70 AD, regardless of what you think of the doctrine of preterism versus futurism or whatever, that fact can't be denied. From that moment forward, I don't see another document written saying, hey, you know, I'm going to give you a fourth chance at the promised land. No. I believe Christ, when He said, it is finished, done, fini, it's set in stone, and guess what? It's over. It is over. And, you know, like Rod said, if it says in the Word that that's what's going to happen, then it really doesn't matter how it occurs. The fact of the matter is, it did occur. So where is the hubris to believe that they've been called home? And some people of the Jewish faith use that section of the Bible, or the Torah, to make the claim that God has gathered them back together. But many of the true Torah-believing Jews say, no, no. There's been no such call. Again, that land was dispossessed from 70 AD until the 1800s. There were still people there that considered themselves Jewish in faith that lived there. Yes, most certainly. You know as well as I do where the promise came from, and the promise that eventually became the nation state of Israel did not come from God the second time around. It came from the British, from the English, in the Balfour Declaration.
Yep.
And even that didn't work out well, because from 1917 until 1945, you know, they were at each other's throats to the point where, you know, the hotel was blown up, and I forget the name of the hotel now, where the British officers were staying, and they killed several British officers. I personally can't take sides in that argument. I can see both sides. And, you know, for someone to move into a neighborhood that has been in someone else's family for 500 years, since 150 AD, and then you come sliding in 1912 and say, oh no, you got to get the hell out of here, this is my house. Well, I'm sorry, but if you don't expect there's going to be a fight, you're not being very realistic. Oh, there's going to be a fight, you can rest assured. And there has been, and there continues to be. And the thing that's really sad is each side sees the other as less than human. These are human beings. These are women and children that are being destroyed. It's their blood that's running in the streets, regardless of what tribe they come from. All to argue over a patch of dirt just seems to me to be, well, not very damned benevolent.
Pretty disgusting. So it looks to me that nothing has progressed beyond the idea of conquest in this planet. I mean,
exactly. That hasn't changed a bit.
No. Well, the thing that, speaking of certain types of conquest, and you're talking about the Georgia Guidestones and all these things that are coming forth, and then, of course, this past weekend with in New York, you know, the ones flying in them are private jets screaming about climate change, and then the fools in the streets who, and don't you love it, like I said last week, how they never changed the names from the old Soviet and the old communist ways, like that one to fail here in Carmel Valley. Now, this one was the People's March for Climate Change. Don't you just love those old references to communism? I mean, really. Jeez.
The new age colonialism, or whatever you want to call it, imperialism,
mm-hmm.
it differs from the old world way of doing things in that it's not
right.
Quite as brutal as, you know, coming in and just bludgeoning everyone with a club.
Right, like Genghis Khan. Okay, which brings me to this whole point of this Agenda 21 movement, which is, you know, on display. And, of course, Schmuckface and the White House is, you know, championing for all kinds of horrible things. You know, the cap and trade and, you know, redistribution of wealth, et cetera. So this quest here in the States is happening not with, like you say, the interest of Stalin and guns and his little Cheka group. It's being done through manipulation, the Hegelian dialectic, and you've got these people completely brainwashed, fully dumbed down, and they're marching to their own damn FEMA camps. And I sit there and I go, dear Lord.
It's being done with EBT cards and Santa Claus for everyone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, that's what's happening here. And, of course, here in California, I'm up against a brick wall because I cannot preach to the choir. I'm like one out of maybe 100 people who get it here. It's
well, you might be able to convert the barnacles down at the wharf, you know.
I probably would have better luck with them, yes. But, I mean,
I think most of them have more brain cells than some of the folks you're going to run across out there. But
oh, my gosh. And then we deal with Sacramento and you know, and worth of this election, because we've got Neel Kashkari, who I don't trust, and he's hiding behind the R, you know, the Republican ticket. It's my choices here are slim and zero. I mean, it's bad. But I fight for the ones that I think that, you know, would offer the best, and I try to spread the word, and it's a battle. I mean, it's a daily, it's craziness what I go through here.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting today. I read through a debate. I didn't get involved in it because it's pointless. Doesn't bear any fruits at all. But it was interesting to read because the debate was on immigration.
Oh, dear.
And it's something that, well, and it's something that I think we would do well to heed. And it's something that I have talked about previously. And I know people get pretty heated when I bring up this subject, or they did in the past. You know, the Declaration of Independence, the very premise that created the United States of America and gave rise to the Constitution. We all know that famous line, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. It does not say that U.S. citizens are created special with rights above everyone else on the earth because they happen to be situated in a land that they conquered from the frickin' Native American Indians. It doesn't say that. So, presumably, American Indians are not U.S. citizens. They belong to the Navajo Nation, the Arapaho Nation. You know, that's why they called them Indian nations, the nations.
Right.
They are. They are not,
so,
by definition, U.S. citizens. But yet, they're allowed to freely travel.
Did I lose him? We lost sound. Can't see the chat room, so I don't know if you guys can hear me, but... I think he has to reboot or something. I think I'm coming through, so I don't know, and I have no control over the board. Maybe we'll just wait and see if he can get back in. Could be the Skype connection. Don't know.
All right. Hopefully you got me back.
Yes. They
okay.
can hear me.
Wow. I don't know what the heck is going on. I'll tell you, my computer's been acting weird lately. So what I was talking about is this guy, he actually handles immigration law. And he was telling these guys that they need to be careful because they don't understand the precedent that they're asking to be set. And here's what I mean by that, and here's what he means. And I got to reading it, and I thought, you know what, he's exactly right. And I'm glad that he laid it out in the manner that he did because it was very clear to me. And I always knew there was something, there was some rub on the immigration deal, and I just hadn't delved into it far enough to fully appreciate it. One of the things we talk about is illegal immigrants. And we talk about that they've committed a crime coming here illegally. Well, that's actually not true. They have not committed a crime. In the law, you have criminal law, civil law, and equity law. And coming into the United States outside of an official entry point without proper paperwork and permission is a civil misdemeanor. It's like getting a traffic ticket for rolling through a stop sign. It is a civil offense. It is not a crime.
So
it's not a criminal act.
Code. So when...
Remaining,
when they,
hold on. Remaining, staying, continuing to remain in the United States without permission is also not a crime. And there is this thing that we have called the Constitution that says that no person, doesn't say no citizen, says no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment. So, you know, if that was a Mexican national that committed murder up here, we still have to give him a fair trial. Same as an American citizen.
Right.
There's also this thing that says that no person shall be deprived of liberty or property without due process. Isn't that funny?
So,
but somehow people want us to believe that simply by on the evidence alone, without a judge, jury, or a trial, you're convicted, you're guilty, and we can just sentence you accordingly without due process. And that you don't enjoy the rights of due process and all the other rights afforded to Americans by the Constitution. Well, we can't have it both ways.
Right.
Either the Constitution grants us all these rights, that is, the government grants these rights, bestows them upon us by us being situated in the contiguous United States, or they are, as the Declaration of Independence points out, unalienable, self-evident truths that exist with or without the government.
Right. You're right. You can't have it both ways. So when... I'm just looking at it from a sovereignty situation. How?
Oh, certainly.
I mean, you can't bring the whole group in, the whole 3 or 4 billion, because they're miserable from all over the planet. So that's my question: is how do you protect from so
well,
many?
Well, how you protect from that is you have a government that actually does its job and enforces our naturalization and immigration laws.
Right.
Affording those people that do sneak in
mm-hmm.
all the same rights and liberties as anyone else in the United States. We don't treat them differently just because we're pissed off that they're here and we don't want them here. And we need to ask why we don't want them here in many cases. And I think the thing that gets most people angry in the immigration, I personally don't have anything against immigrants, legal or otherwise. What I do have a problem with is people that are given my paycheck simply because they're present in the United States, legally or otherwise. I have a problem with the theft of my property without due process, okay? And the redistribution of that theft
right.
to others. You know, I
so
have to earn my living. Why is
yeah,
it no one
is,
else needs to?
So this is an issue of how things are being run in Das Kapital, is what you're telling me.
Absolutely,
words,
precisely. And it's how it's been run
right?
since prior to Reagan. And obviously, we have not learned our lesson as Americans because we have not held the feet to the proverbial fire on our elected officials in all this damn time.
Correct.
I don't care. I personally don't care if they want to grant amnesty to all those folks. Here's the thing, okay? You mean to tell me that the government has the right to tell a private individual from Mexico that he cannot enter into a private contract with another individual in Seattle to provide labor or services or whatever to that person? So the right to contract has been nullified somehow, and we have to jump through all these hoops. If you look at you look at some of the language from the Social Security Administration, the Internal Revenue Service, you look at the documentation, you know, are you eligible to work in the United States? Excuse me? You mean there's like a litmus test I have to pass before I'm eligible to earn a living and survive in the United States?
Oh my God.
What the hell is that?
Right.
Where do I find that located in the – where's that in the Constitution? It ain't in there. You won't find
there's
it.
There's actually – yeah, there's two solutions to this. One is to do what you said with the enforcement of what's on the books already, which I have championed. And the other thing which I have also championed is cut off the bank. I don't care whether they come from Cambodia, Mexico.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, does it?
You know,
it doesn't matter what they
stamp
on the coinage or the paper either.
It's still redistribution of wealth, and that's where it has to end. This money should not flow to people from another through theft and coercion. And what the system we live under, which is very close to what Hamilton wanted. He got his wish, after all, the schmuck. So those are the two solutions. Just, you know, and like I said, it's not just to the ones coming from Mexico. It's permeated to every race, creed, size. I mean, it is the
antithesis
of a free market.
Here's the thing. We do not have a viable pathway in our law for a guest worker program of any kind. Now, I think we can all agree that the entire purpose of the clause in our Artusian limiting the importation of people into the newly formed United States, giving that over to the Congress, was quite simply a means to an end of slavery. Taking the ability for individual states to import new people and leaving it with the Congress, we know what that was for. And slavery, as it existed then, is over. Well, we've got a new form of peonage here in the colonies. Rest assured, I'm not going to make an argument that we don't. But I think it's time that, you know, we could talk about amending our Constitution and the states relinquishing that power back from the federal government. But, you know, again, that's a pipe dream. It presupposes that the states have any power and that the United States is still in existence like it was prior to, you know, 1860. And that's all a bunch of hokum.
Exactly.
You know, that's,
I
understand and I hear these folks, you know, it's like on Mikey's show the other night, he had the guys talking about secession and the state of Texas seceding. And, you know, it's a great idea, it's great in theory, but how does it work in practice, quite honestly? Because you're going to have a segment of your state, people that don't agree with that. So do we enforce our will on those people that don't want to secede? And how does Texas secede from the federal government at this point it's not as if they can recall their representatives and their senators because they weren't appointed. They were elected by popular vote. So the only feasible way going forward that I could see that working is to have a referendum, and they would have to have a popular vote. And that's really just a pure democracy, isn't it? So it's almost self-defeating in and of itself. Don't get me wrong. I still embrace the idea something needs to happen, but I think it's too little too late. I think we're far past the Rubicon. It's so far back that it's not even in the rearview mirror anymore.
Yeah, it's pretty far gone. It's sad, but it's what we live under, and we don't live under what we thought we did or what we've been told erroneously, as you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and like you said on previous shows, that the freedom you think you had, even when you were a small child, it never really existed, because none of us are that old. I mean, I'm old, but I ain't that old. So, yeah, it goes back
to you know. Yeah, Carlin had it right. He said they call it the American dream because you got to be asleep to believe it.
Oh, isn't he funny?
That's sad, but true. Well,
God,
I mean, the guy was a philosopher, and a lot of people, he really pissed a lot of people off, but he was speaking the truth.
Yeah.
You know, he was telling you the truth. Thing was, you know, he couched it in terms of comedy so people would laugh, but it was a nervous laugh because they knew damn good and well he was telling them the truth.
Oh, yeah.
They just didn't want to admit it. And when presented in the form of comedy, then, well, you can't really get too mad at the guy because it's comedy. Hey, Doc, good to see you, sir.
Yeah, it's, well, people, it is hard to see it. It's hard to actually accept it. I mean, we're all living in denial at some point. That's why I do what I do and try to educate myself and others and fight the good fight, because I'm not going down without one. That's it. I don't care. I'm not marching myself into the boxcar without, you know, actually, I won't even, they'll have to shoot me to get me up there. So that's it. I ain't going. I'm not going quietly into that good night, as they said.
Absolutely. So, I'm gonna jump back just for a minute back to the Georgia Guidestones. And I put up in the chat room, and I'll put it back up there again, because if I had run across this previously, I don't remember it. It may be that I have it saved somewhere, but I don't recall. And that is a pamphlet that was put out primarily by the company that erected the Guidestones. And I think, you know, this is the biggest contract, biggest project they ever had ever mm-hmm. undertaken. So, but I wanted to read from you a quote from the group that Mr. R.C. Christian was alleged to have represented. And it says, quote, "It is very probable that humanity now possesses the knowledge needed to establish an effective world government. In some way, that knowledge must be widely seated in the consciousness of all mankind. Very soon, the hearts of our human family must be touched and warmed so we will welcome a global rule of reason. The group consciousness," and you remember that, group consciousness,
mm-hmm.
"of our race is blind, perverse, and easily distracted by trivia when it should be focused on fundamentals. We are entering a critical era. Population pressures will soon create political and economic crisis throughout the world. These will make more difficult and at the same time more needed the building of a rational world society. A first step will be to convince a doubting world that such a society is now possible. Let us keep in view enduring appeals to the collective reason of humanity. Let us draw attention to the basic problems. Let us establish proper priorities. We must order our home here on earth before we reach for the stars. Human reason is now awakening to its strength. It is the most powerful agency yet released in the unfolding of life on our planet. We must make humanity aware that acceptance of compassionate, enlightened reason will let us control our destiny within the limits inherent in our nature. It is difficult to seed wisdom in closed human minds. Cultural inertias are not easily overcome. Unfolding world events and the sad record of our race dramatize the shortcomings of traditional agencies in governing human affairs. The approaching crisis may make mankind willing to accept a system of world law which will stress the responsibility of individual nations in regulating internal affairs and which will assist them in the peaceful management of international frictions. With such a system, we could eliminate war, we could provide every person an opportunity to seek a life of purpose and fulfillment. Yeah.
So,
sounds a lot like some folks at the United Nations.
Well, sure. And where do you think they got their ideology from besides Karl Marx? This guy sounds like a Fabian socialist to me. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
I have been keeping poor Mr. Robert at bay for nearly 19 minutes, and I want to bring him in because I'm sure he is frothing at the mouth at this point. So we're going to bring up Mr. Robert Kaplan. How are you, sir?
I'm hanging in there, sir.
Our second
I just want to say that was a bravo show. I wasn't even drooling.
Well, you couldn't smell the bacon.
They took my signs down from the Rialto, where the hospital was, where my dad's hospital was. So you know what Leonie and I did last night? I left about 100 cards at Julia's office, and I put my sign right in front of Governor Rick Scott's office.
Wow.
Yes, I did. I declared war.
Oh, Robert, correct me.
I did. I swear to God, Miss Linda, I declared war because they're full of shit. They're just full. I'm sorry, Ron. I didn't mean to cuss on your show. You can
kick
me off.
Okay. You can say it. I don't think there are any children here, and I'm pretty sure that everyone in the room has heard it previously.
I need to give that Julio Gonzalez MD a digital rectal exam and an orthopedic workup at the same time.
No. Just Robert, I'm gonna give you some medical terminology. You have my permission to utilize this terminology going forward in your campaign.
Thank you, sir.
And there should be, I know there are plenty of competent surgeons down in your area that could perform this procedure.
Yes,
and
sir.
And the proper medical terminology is a plastectomy.
That's right. I agree wholeheartedly.
That is where they take and they cut out a section of the abdomen and put in a plexiglass window so that the individual with his head up his sphincter can see where he's going.
Exactly. Yes. Rod, I'm so, you know, this is what I told him on Facebook. Linda, you got to check out my campaign. Are you checking out my campaign on Facebook?
I haven't had time because I've been phone banking for my candidate here.
Well, friend me, Linda, on Facebook.
Okay.
Because they're still banning me.
I absolutely refuse to participate in the social experiment in mass mind control known as Facebook.
Oh, my God, Ron, it's awful. It's just horrible. It's a horrible ordeal, but I had to do it for wrong reason because my opponent was on Facebook. And he says,
I know all the reasoning. Trust me, I know all the reasoning. I was told many years ago when I got involved in all of this that I needed to be on Facebook, and I don't even think Twitter was around at that time.
No.
I also needed to be on a website called Peach Pundit.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a local thing here in Georgia for politicians. I had to get to know people and rub elbows and kissy-kissy and all that good shit. You know, I'm not a real social kind of person when it comes to that. You want social out of me, you got to press the flesh and meet me face-to-face. Let's sit down and have a beer summit, you know. That I can
and
do.
That's what I've been saying, Ron. I've been saying that. They don't want it. They don't want look, they're not going to debate me anymore. Because I called out Morgan and Morgan Law Firm for the people. I called them out because they stole. They were having a debate. They stole. They were two guys were pretending to be boxers, you know. And they stole my boxing routine, just like Elizabeth for governor stole it, but she had red boxing gloves on. I got stopped yesterday in Osprey, Florida, for a speeding ticket, and the sheriff goes to me and says, you need to be passing cards in your own district. I said, this is my district, sir. If you want to give me a ticket or put me in jail, you may. He gave me a warning. He took off.
Wow.
I had never been stopped in the town of Osprey in all my life. And I've been driving since I was 14. So the moral of the story is, Ron, Linda, you're right on the money. It's a we were living in a manufactured free country with a manufactured communist president by the name of John F. Kennedy, and that's the moral of the story. All right? So as far as I'm concerned, history does repeat itself, and people like to steal campaign fundraisers and use them for their own benefits, and I can't even get a campaign fundraiser fund for me and my town in my 1974. I've tried. I'm not going to try anymore. I'm giving up. But on one note, I'm not giving up on my charity fundraiser for bullying because one of my black constituents in another county lost her son and committed suicide because he couldn't take the bullying no more. So I called all my politicians to resign. My present politicians in the office to resign because they're nothing but bullies. And I told Debbie Wasserman Schultz and my state senator, and I told my opponent for Julio Gonzalez MD to send them a big Cuban cigar so they could blow smoke rings in his face. So now that's my last jaunt of campaigning. I'm done. And I told them.
Well, you know,
let me finish one more thing. My dad fought for freedom, justice, and liberty for all. And when the Indian doctors and the Spanish doctors came into this town to try to practice medicine, the good old boys were against them. This is for you, Morgan and Morgan, if you're hearing me. You are a good old boy. All of you. And if you want to come and get me, I gave you my number, 447-2179, area code 941. Okay? And this is what I said to them. The Indian doctors and the Spanish doctors they fought tooth and nail against my dad to get him into practice medicine. And my dad made them accept him. That's how my dad was. He was the true pillar of the community. And no one comes in, like you said, in someone's town 10 years or less and try to say he's the true pillar of the community. No one. Period. And I'm your next Florida State representative of District 74. That's the bottom line. A black constituent killed himself because of being bullied.
Yeah.
And
no one's
not going to bully me no more. And that's it. I'm done, Ron. Go ahead. You got the floor now. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. I just, some people have difficulty with, you know, not being accepted as part of the group, I guess. What I was going to say is one of the most brilliant feats of campaign finance ever pulled off was one Barack Hussein Obama, when he declined DNC funding for his presidential campaign, went into just relied wholly on what they call, quote, private funding, and then went on to collect the most money ever raised by a single candidate from large corporate donors like J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs.
Bankers,
yeah.
Goldman Sachs.
Played him.
Yeah, I remember that.
And yet played himself off as just the common, you know, black guy from the neighborhood.
Sure.
That, you know, just, oh, my gosh. And he's so articulate. What was that Joe Biden said, you know, a light-skinned black man who's very articulate. You know, he speaks really well.
And he smells good, too.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but. And, you know, it's like today. They're talking about this Hispanic guy who jumped the fence at the White House, right, with a knife. Made it all the way to the front door. Not that there was anybody home. I guess maybe he was going to stab the portrait of George Washington or something. Maybe they should have let him go and he was going to stab the portrait of Abe Lincoln. I don't know. But he clearly posed a significant threat running across the yard with a knife. And so the story today is, oh my gosh, he had over 800 rounds of ammunition in his car. Well, that really has nothing to do with anything because he was carrying a knife.
I know.
I mean, what the hell does it matter? I mean, honest to God, if they stopped me on my way to work tomorrow, okay, the news story would be, you know, we don't know what this guy was up to, but he had several firearms. That would be three handguns and a rifle, and over 10,000 rounds of ammunition in his automobile. Now, the story wouldn't clue you into the fact that I had one .357 Magnum with six rounds in it, a .22 caliber handgun with no ammunition in it, a .22 Magnum handgun still in the box with no ammunition in it, a .22 Magnum rifle with no ammunition in it, and a bag containing several boxes of the very difficult to purchase and find right now .22 and .22 Magnum ammunition. You know, and those are commonly sold in boxes of 500 and 1,000.
Right.
So to have 10 boxes of 1,000 rounds of .22 rifle, it's not uncommon. It's not even gross. It's not a lot of ammunition when you're talking about a .22 rifle. And I do have a case of shotgun, 12-gauge shotgun ammo out of the, and it's simply because I've been too damn lazy to take it out of the back of the car and put it in the gun safe. But nonetheless, the headlines would be very dramatic.
Oh, of course.
Even though no one has planned to take on Fort Benning, Georgia, with 10,000 rounds of .22 long rifle ammo. You know, it's kind of like the Fort Dix 6. You remember those guys? It kills me when I hear some of these horror stories and, you know, ISIL and the evil Muslims are coming to get us here in the U.S. Hey, go for it. Do you know how many flipping registered gun owners there are here in Georgia? It would be a damn free-for-all in about 2 seconds flat. These boys don't need much of an excuse to start shooting people that don't look like them.
Wow.
Exactly.
I mean, if those guys want any chance of getting through the state alive, they better be wearing you know, overalls and a neck beard and chewing Copenhagen with a John Deere hat on. Or they're in deep kimchi. I'm here to tell you. What you looking at, boy?
Hey, hey, Ron, let me ask you a question.
Yes,
sir. What type of cigar should I get so Leona can take a picture of me with a cigar with my towel on and a cap on?
Oh God, be careful with that cigar.
Yeah, but which
that
one?
That could get you. That Robert, that alone could get you labeled as a liberal.
Really?
Well,
really?
Just think Oval Office and Monica. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah, you're right about that. Don't let her wear a blue dress.
Whatever you do, don't let her wear a blue dress.
All right. I'm talking about me smoking a cigar just to blow smoke rings in their face.
Yeah, I understand, but I'm just telling you that could be turned around pretty quickly.
All right, I gotcha.
You could be seen as a Clinton supporter.
You could be seen as a Clinton supporter then. I will heed to your advice, sir. I won't do it. It was just a thought.
Not a bad one, but I just think you could be labeled a Clinton supporter from that picture. You know how those things get twisted around.
You know what, Ron?
They
even took my sign down from my psychologist that I used to go to after my stroke and heart, you know, after my bout to this hospital with diverticulitis, my bad hip. They took my sign down. So you know what I said? Actually, my psychologist made a comment to me when I went into his office. I had a purple shirt on, right? This is back in 2010. So he said, you know, people who wear color purple, only royal people with royalty wear color purple. And that really ticked me off. I quit seeing him after that because I didn't like that statement. There was a shirt that my brother gave me.
Well, it is true. That is the royal color.
I know it's true, but it offended me.
I'm going to give you a prescription, Robert. I want you, because you have too much anxiety and stress in your life. What you need to do is tomorrow, I want you to take the night off. I want you to get your hands on a copy of an old movie with Eddie Murphy.
Uh-huh.
Called The Distinguished Gentleman. No. The Color of Money was Paul Newman. I want you to get a movie called The Distinguished Gentleman.
I saw that movie. That was a great movie.
And watch it.
I watch it. That was a great movie. You're absolutely 100%. That was a great
movie. And it will reinforce everything that you already know about government.
Well, you know, Ron, it's becoming a joke now. It's just becoming a joke.
And I want to do something real quick because I've only got like 9 minutes left. I want to give you a movie preview for those of you that may not have seen it. And Miss Linda, I'm telling you, if you have not watched The Matrix yet, go get it and watch it. Doggone it!
Is that new movie that's out, Ron? The Matrix?
No.
Been out for a long time with Keanu Reeves. But I did happen to see a movie yesterday I watched on television. Captain America 2. I don't know how many of you watched the original Captain America or read the comic book Captain America back in the day. I did as a young man. And anyway, in Captain America 2, Captain America was an experiment. He was an experimental soldier during World War II. And the guy just had superhuman strength and endurance and all these things. So anyway, he nearly died in World War II, so they put him in cryogenic suspension. And fast forward to Captain America 2, and he's in the modern day or perhaps, 10 years in our future. And he's working for a company that is a government entity, kind of like the Federal Reserve Bank. It's not part of the government, but, and this company is doing some things that he doesn't like. And, of course, having the mindset of someone who came of age in 1945, or 42, he still believes very strongly in freedom and truth and justice and the American way kind of deal, that myth that we've all been sold. And so he doesn't like what this company is doing. And come to find out, they have these new aircraft carriers that they've built, three of them. Three carriers, and they're actually like hovercraft aircraft carriers. And in the original, he was fighting the Nazi war machine that was behind Hitler. It wasn't Hitler that was evil. It was actually called the Hydra, had many heads. And the Hydra was planning world domination. Well, fast forward, you know, 80 years in the future, 70 years in the future, and damn if the Hydra doesn't still exist. And it was the Nazi scientist that they brought over during Operation Paperclip at the end of World War II. And this one scientist, he wrote this algorithm. And this algorithm is targeting people, precognitive crime. Not crime, mind you, but people who pose a threat or would pose a threat to the new order of things. So these three carriers are able to target millions of individual targets at a time. And they're going to rise up to 3,000 feet, and they have 22 million targets they're going to eliminate simultaneously in the United States. And the targets are individual people.
Oh, dear.
Because they pose a threat because they are thinkers, free thinkers, that will not accept one world government.
Pretty
damned interesting movie.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was ironic, the timing of everything, you know, today. I watched that movie yesterday, and then today a guy starts a thread about the Georgia Guidestones, and then a buddy of mine calls me on the phone, and he mentions the Guidestones, and then my daughter emails me, and I'm like, okay, I got to look at this and see what's going on, because I hadn't seen anything about it. But very interesting times that we are party to.
Ron,
yes, sir.
Can you send me rscapital11@comcast.net? Could you please send me the thing of the guy shows the excerpt that you just that you read?
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
I would try to memorize it, but I don't know if I can or not.
It's pretty long.
Pretty long. Okay.
It is pretty long, but it should be in here.
I'm going to let you guys go. Have a commitment.
Okay.
Good night, Robert.
And I love you guys, and I just want to know, I'm fighting to fight. At least I said my piece, and I defended my father. And that's all I was set out to do. So,
have a great night. Be blessed.
Okay, you
God
too.
Bless.
How's strong and everybody and the
pretty good so far as I hear. Bill was listening in the chat room earlier, but
Terry doing
or in the studio.
How's she doing with her diverticulitis?
I think she's doing okay. She's taking a little break from the shows, and I think it's more just frustration with BTR than anything else. And that link should be in your email right now.
Okay.
So,
all
right,
okay.
Will do.
Okay,
God bless you, Mr.
Thanks, Ron.
You're welcome.
And I'll let you wrap it up, and thanks for doing a great show, and I'll see you guys on Bill's show tomorrow.
Thanks for calling in, Miss Linda. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye-bye. All right, guys. Well, I guess that wraps us up for another episode of the Constitution Hour. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to me ramble on. Really appreciate it. FT, Doc, Miss Linda, Yola, or Nick, and Rod Luke, posthumously. He's had to bail out on us. And Mr. Mikey B, Robert Kaplan, Miss Linda Sills. We had Bill Strong in the studio listening in for a while. Hope everybody's doing well. Remember, tune in here tomorrow night at 7 and then Wednesday night at 7 for a couple of more shows. The Hoot and Holler show tomorrow and Miss Linda Sills right from the left coast on Wednesday night. God bless you guys. We'll see y'all on the flip side. Stay safe. Bye-bye.